Well, I don't know why, but sometimes the reality of conflict catches me by surprise. I don't know why conflict would catch me by surprise. I mean, life and relationship, it's just part of the deal. I mean, you think about it, every story that's ever told, every essay that's ever, creative essay that's ever written, every movie that's ever made, and a lot of the songs that are sung have at their heart and at their center the rise of a conflict and then the resolution, right? I mean, that's like grade 9 or 8 or something. I don't even know what time. But sometimes conflict catches me by surprise. I'm in the middle of a conflict right now with Amazon.ca. Man, you know, it is just absolutely unbelievable. I just counted up this morning to see where it's at, and their emails to me, number 51, trying to get this figured out. 51 emails one way, let alone the ones I send back. I've had like 7 phone calls with numerous first line people and 2 or 3 managers and all these. And they're all like, well, we're very sorry, Mr. Jones. We just don't understand. It's just an unbelievable thing. I just tried to order some of the material. Now, it wouldn't be that big of a deal if it was like 10 cents that rolls under the cashier's counter. This is $10,000 we're talking about here. And so the fact I ordered it got canceled. And so, you know, hey, why did it get canceled? Well, you know, maybe you're not authorized access, and okay, well, you got to order it. We're sanitized, you got to order again. Hey, you're not going to send this stuff in triplets, are you? Because that's like $30,000, and there's not enough room in my cart for $30,000, let me tell you. Oh, no, no, I guarantee you. Well, not only do I get some stuff in triplicate, I get just part of the stuff in triplicates, and it's shipped to a place where I live, Chin and I live, 2 houses ago. I mean, I know I shouldn't change houses as often as I should. Poor Henry in Durham there, I'm always around the office getting some, but you know, it's just an unbelievable thing. Unbelievable thing. But it shouldn't surprise me. Now, maybe it's because I'm in the middle of this conflict that I see in Exodus chapter 18 a whole thing on conflict. How it arises, and more importantly for us, how it is resolved. It might be that I just see it that way because I'm in this conflict, but I don't think so, because if you look and do a bit of research, you'll see that a number of the Old Testament scholars, they point out how the editor of Exodus, when they put it all together, they made sure that it was written in such a way that Exodus chapter 17 and Exodus chapter 18 mirror each other. Remember chapter 17 where Scott talked last week about the Amalekites and the war and the destruction of the Amalekites. And chapter 18 and chapter 17 are kind of mirrors because they're going to go together, because it centers at least in part on this whole thing about conflict and bad ways of handling conflict and good ways of resolving conflict. So let's take a look at Exodus chapter 18 and see if you can pick up on all the conflicts. Some of them are pretty obvious, and one of them at least is a bit more subtle. Okay, here we go. Exodus chapter 18. Now Jethro, the priest of Midian and father-in-law of Moses. Now, what's interesting about Jethro is he's called by 3 different names in the Bible. The last time we encountered him was back there in Exodus chapter 2 when Moses first showed up. And in that place, he's called Reuel. And over in Numbers, he's called Hobab. And so, hey, you know, is this a contradiction in the Bible? No, no, no. Same guy, okay? Same guy. And there's a bunch of stuff, tribal names, and we won't get into it. So, all right. So Jethro, father-in-law, shows up when he heard of everything that God had done for Moses and for his people Israel, and how the Lord had brought Israel out of Egypt. After Moses had sent away his wife Zipporah, his father-in-law Jethro received her and her 2 sons. 1 son was named Gershom, for Moses said, I've become a foreigner in a foreign land. The other was Eleazar. For he said, my father's God was my helper. He saved me from the sword or of Pharaoh. Now, this is both times for Eleazar, first and last. First time he's mentioned, last time he's mentioned. And they've got the record of the sons' names in here because they're reminders of where Moses and Israel had been, enslaved in Egypt. And they're reminders that God is a deliverer in the face of conflict. Okay, so that's why they got them in there. All right, verse 5. Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, together with Moses' sons and wife, came to him in the wilderness where he was camped near the mountain of God. Scott explained that last week. Jethro, who sent word to him, said, I, your father-in-law, Jethro, am coming to you with your wife and your two sons. So Moses went out to meet his father-in-law, bowed down and kissed him. That was the way that they greeted, showed respect in those days. They greeted each other, and then they went into the tent. And Moses told his father-in-law about everything the Lord had done to Pharaoh and the Egyptians for the sake, and about all the hardships that they'd met along the way, and how the Lord had saved them. Notice that Moses' testimony had a lot to do with the hardships that he had, and how God had brought them through the hardship. It's an important part of our testimony. You remember, just a few weeks ago, Mike and Chelsea's testimony about manna. Remember that? He didn't say it. You can go back and you watch it a couple of weeks ago. Can't remember how long it was. Great testimony. But it had to do with God taking him through hardship, these tests that we do. So same deal. Moses explains all these hard things. Jethro was delighted, was amazed, was awestruck to hear about all the good things the Lord had done for Israel in rescuing from the land of the Egyptians, getting them through this hard time. He said, "Praise be to the Lord who rescued from the hand of the Egyptians and of Pharaoh, and who rescued the people from the hand of the Egyptians. Now I know that the Lord is greater than all the other gods, for he did this to those who treated Israel arrogantly." Then Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, brought a burnt offering and other sacrifices to God. And Aaron came with all the elders of Israel to eat a meal with Moses' father-in-law in the presence of God. Now, if you read the Jewish scholars, they say that this was Jethro being converted to Yahweh, to the God of Israel. Now, other scholars say, no. Jethro was a Midianite, and he's a descendant of Abraham, so he already had a knowledge and a faith, okay? And then other guys say, no, he wasn't converted at all. He's just saying, notice Yahweh's greater than all the other gods, so he's still a polytheist, but maybe God's just a little bit better. So a bit of a controversy. Personally, I go with the Jewish guys because it's their story. And I think that at this point, Jethro was kind of converted to Yahweh's, and he enters into this sacrifice, and he enters into a covenantal meal with the elders and all of Israel. All right. So, here we go. The next day, Moses took his seat to serve as judge for the people, and they stood around him from morning till evening. When his father-in-law saw all that Moses was doing to the people, he said, "What is this that you're doing for the people? Why do you sit alone as judge while all these people stand around from morning till evening?" And Moses answered him, "Because the people will come to me to seek God's will. Whenever they have a dispute, it's brought to me, and I decide between the parties and inform them of God's decrees and instructions." And Moses' father-in-law replied, "What you're doing is not good." Whatever your son-in-law wants to hear. It happened all the time when I'd try and fix stuff at the house, and Sheena's dad would come over and stuff like this. You know that, I always say, you know that TV ad, do you guys watch TV? On TV, there's that thing where there's the patch on the wall, you know, with the paint covers. Have you seen that ad? You know, when the father-in-law's come to the guy's looking embarrassed at the patch. Yeah, you got to keep your eye open for it. That's my experience all the time. Anyway, although he's a very gracious man, so. Moses' father-in-law replied, "What you're doing is not good. You and these people who come to you will only wear yourselves out. The work is too heavy for you. You can't handle it alone." Amen. "Listen now to me, and I'll give you some advice, and may God be with you. You must be the people's representative before God and bring their disputes before him. Teach them his decrees and instructions and show them the way that they're to live and how they are to behave. But select some capable men from all the people, men who fear God, trustworthy men who hate dishonest gain, and appoint them as officials over thousands, hundreds, fifties, and tens. Have them serve as judges for the people at all times, but have them bring every difficult case to you. The simple cases they can decide for themselves. That will make your load lighter because they will share it with you. And if you do this, and God so commands, you'll be able to stand the strain, and all these people will go home satisfied," or will go home at peace, is actually what it says. Moses listened to his father-in-law and did everything that he said, and he chose capable men from Israel and made them leaders of people, officials over thousands, hundreds, fifties, and tens. They served as judges for the people at all times. The difficult cases they brought to Moses, but the simple ones they decided themselves. Then Moses sent his father-in-law on his way, and Jethro returned to his own country. All right. Let's look at this chapter through the lens of conflict resolution and see what we can learn about it with the conflicts that we find ourselves in. It seems to me that the very, very first thing that we need to work on in conflict is to expect it and admit it. To expect it and admit it. Don't be like me and let it just sort of catch you off by surprise, because then kind of bad things can happen. We can respond in inappropriate ways. We need to understand that if we're together with people, conflict, little conflicts, big conflicts, are just sort of going to happen in life. As a matter of fact, I'll bet you that right now that you can think of some level of conflict that you're in right now, maybe with the person sitting right beside you. But some level of conflict, it is just going to happen. I was talking to Allison about conflict this last week, and I said what I've said many times. It's my belief, if you haven't been hurt by somebody in the church in this last year, it's because you don't love enough or you're not involved enough. Because who are the people that hurt us? They're the people that we love, aren't they? It's our spouses, our best friends, our children, our parents, our brothers and sisters in Christ. I mean, if it's somebody we don't care all about, and they just say, hey, Jones, you're a jerk, I'll never see you again. Away you go. No big deal, right? And so if I'm not being, you know, at least get a little, oh, man, that hurt a little bit. I heard a brother, I think, just here the other day. It just kind of happens, you know, when we're together with people, we're working together, we've got a task we've got to accomplish, and we feel like maybe we're pulling our weight a bit more, or they're not doing it right, or I let you down. Well, these conflicts just kind of happen. And it's important that we expect it and that we admit it. It's always a surprise to me when you find people leaving churches, well, because they hurt me. Well, of course they hurt you. Do you love them? Do they love you? Yes, okay, well then it's going to happen. And it's important that we expect and admit it so that we don't either destroy other people in our response or self-destruct. Sometimes if we don't, you know, if we don't admit it and we don't expect it, we tend to do one of two things. One is we just kind of shove it down, and that can give us ulcers and all the rest of it. We can destroy ourselves, or it sort of leaks out in some weird way, in some weird place, and there's, you know, people are like, whoa, Jones, why did you overreact to that? Well, it couldn't really have anything to do with this situation, it had to do with this situation, but all that emotion, I didn't deal with it, and now it comes bubbling up over because you stepped on my toe by accident. The first thing, and we've seen it in the past, is we just need to expect that there's going to be conflict. We need to admit that we're feeling like we're in conflict, like this hurt me, or maybe I've hurt you, or whatever the situation is, so that we can begin to deal with it properly. We see all kinds of conflicts right here. There's conflicts between nations. First, Egypt and Israel. And then, of course, we've got Israel and the Amalekites. And they didn't handle it right. And so there was death and destruction and defeat and misery and sorrow, because the conflict wasn't dealt with. There's some family conflict in here. Maybe it's a bit questionable, but it's kind of interesting that Zipporah, Moses' wife, she's not a very big figure in the Bible. But the last time we encountered Zipporah was way back in chapter 4. And Moses kind of got his assignment, and then this is what happens. At a lodging place upon the way, Moses on the way to Egypt, the Lord met Moses and was about to kill him. But Zipporah took a flint knife and cut off her son's foreskin and touched it at Moses' feet with it. Kind of a weird thing, but this is what she says. Surely you're a bridegroom of blood to me, she said. And so the Lord let him alone. At that time, she said, bridegroom of blood, referring to circumcision. And what a lot of the scholars say is that it says that Moses, when he sent her away, it was right after this. because he didn't take kindly to his wife, and she accusing him of this, and he didn't take kindly of his wife correcting him and doing, you know, you're a bridegroom of blood. And so there's a lot of speculation that Moses said, okay, you're out of here. You're not going to respect me. You're not going to do those things. And she's like, oh, you want to cause yourself to die and my son to die and kill us? I don't respect. And so they say there's a divorce that happened, and she went, had to go home to dad. And that's why Jethro comes and says, hey, Moses, this is Jethro, your father-in-law, a man that you need to respect. And I've got your wife and I've got your kids with me, and we're coming back because we're going to sort this out. Now, there are other guys that say, no, that's not quite so. Probably what happened is he got to Egypt and he realized things were going to get hot, and to protect his wife and his kids, he sent them away. But it's hard for me to tell, but there's a good chunk of the Old Testament scholars that say, you know, there was marital disharmony here, and Jethro has to get involved and try and fix this up. And obviously, there's all kinds of impersonal conflict here, because that's why Moses was having to sit as a judge and why Jethro had to come up with this whole deal. So, conflict. It's going to happen internationally. It's going to happen in our families. It's going to happen in our relationships at work and with our neighbors and with our friends. It's just going to happen. Admit it and expect it. So, once we realize we're in it, then we need to learn. And something's got to change. Something has to change. So what do we learn? Well, several things. Here we go. There's a whole bunch of stuff, but here's what I dug out of it for my life. And so hopefully it'll be helpful to you. Number one in learning a change is choose construction, not destruction. Well, that's a little obvious, Jones. Choose construction, not destruction. Yeah, it is obvious until you're in a conflict. Then all of a sudden, this whole thing about making sure that, hey, we're going to get something constructive out of here, for me at least, sort of can get pushed to the wayside. I remember my problem is that, you know, I'm good until somebody wants to attack me or overpower me, and then I just really have a hard time forgetting the construction is the thing. I remember Jim Biggs was one of the big guys that always pointed this out to me. We used to do youth group together, and we were playing this game. And our team was kind of, I can't remember what kind of a game it was, you know, whatever it was, but two teams. And so I'm like telling these young guys, attack, 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 always attack, always attack. And I look over and Jim's shaking his head and laughing. He said, what was so funny? He says, well, that's you, Jones. Anything comes up, your immediate response is attack, attack, always attack. No. That can be so incredibly destructive. I mean, I even have that problem when it comes to inanimate objects. Something's not going right to me. I've got a little rule of thumb for myself, and that is I try and fix something or turn a screw or whatever it is 3 times. If it's not done after 3 times, I walk away. Sometimes she intervenes a little ahead of it because she can see I'm not going to even make the 3 times because I have wrecked so much stuff getting ticked off. And then sometimes, even when we know we're sort of on the losing end of it, we still want to be destructive. My dad used to try and say to me, Alan, don't be like me. Don't be so bloody-minded. Is that a Canadian thing? Do you know what that phrase is, bloody-minded? Or maybe it's an English thing. To be bloody-minded is, you might be going to win, but I'm going to cost you some blood to get this done. I'm going to make it as hard for you as you possibly can. I might have to go along with this, but boy, it's going to be tough for you. Dad, Alan, don't be so bloody-minded. It's an English phrase. So when we're in the midst of a conflict, some of us just kind of go to destruction instead of construction. Now, for some folks, it's not to destroy the other person like it is with me. Some folks in the midst of conflict destroy themselves. They don't stand up. Then they feel bad, and they've got all kinds of self-hatred going on. Jeff and I were talking about this financial course that he's going to be leading us through. I'm really looking forward to it. But he was talking about divorce and remarriage situations. And he's talking about how sometimes people get themselves into real problems because they're just sort of the recessive, submissive, not standing up for themselves type. And before they know it, they're in a situation where either, you know, they're in this new marriage or whatever. And it's like miserable because they didn't say, hey, I've got a few expectations and stuff going on here. And so what we've got to do when we realize that we're in a conflict is, first of all, realize, you know, I can be constructive here or I can be destructive here. I choose to be constructive. I choose to be constructive. The Amalekites, they chose destruction to go against God and against Israel, and they were destroyed. Jethro, the Jewish scholars tell us, as a Midianite, as another nation, chose construction. Construction. And so he was able to do okay, and his descendants ended up being part of the Sanhedrin, Jewish tradition says, and so on. So choose construction, not destruction, even in the midst of the conflict. Number two. Second thing that I saw in here for me is have a system and a structure in place to handle conflict. Have a system and structure in place to handle conflict. Even if it's in your mind, let alone your system, of your family system or your workplace, have a system and structure in place, because efficiency helps resolution and ensures important things get done. Efficiency helps resolution and it ensures that important things get done. You see, the problem with conflict, or one of the problems, is it can so consume us that the mission and what needs to get done ends up not getting done. The important stuff doesn't get done because of the urgency of the conflict. So you're going to have a system that's in place. What's really interesting, notice this. God used Jethro to have Moses put a system in place before he gave the law. The law is going to be handled down over there in chapter 20. And so a lot of the scholars say, well, you know, chapter 18, it really historically, it's in the wrong place. It should be after, you know, they have a... But the bottom line is, God understands that systems and structures are important and they help avoid or resolve conflict. Now, for some of us, that's pretty tough. You guys have seen the chart, you chart yourself, you know... You got task-oriented people and people-oriented people and structured people and unstructured people. Have you guys seen those quadrants and you plot yourself on it? I'm task-unstructured. Worst possible scenario you can get for anybody with any kind of a leadership thing. Just really, I'm task-unstructured. Now, Sheena, she is people-structured. This results in several conversations. And lots of times, you know, she's a real systems person, and sometimes she feels like, you know, kind of devalued or whatever, to the systems people, because, you know, I'm task unstructured. But the truth, and so I have to discipline myself to realize and remember that, no, systems are important. Because without systems, people get hurt. You see, Moses, he had the right motives, but he had the wrong method. And so the people were suffering. They were standing in line all day long, and their issues were still not resolved. Because Moses, he had a good heart, he had good intention, and he even had some wisdom to hand out, but his structures couldn't sustain the job that needed to get done. His structures and systems couldn't handle the conflicts and the level of conflicts that were coming in. So there had to be a system and a structure to help things out. Without a good system, Moses was neglecting what he needed to do. Jethro says, listen, you're supposed to be before God. You're supposed to have this priestly function of praying for your people and taking them before God. You're supposed to have this teaching and instruction time. You're supposed to be teaching people God and God's ways and how to live their life. And instead, you're not totally out in this priestly prayerful function. You don't have time to teach and instruct all the people because you're settling these matters and you're not even doing a good job at this. Moses, you're too flooded. You know, one of the helpful things, we did a marriage retreat a number of years ago with David Fast, and one of the things that he taught us was really helpful on this whole thing. This is kind of fits, but it's a bit of an aside. He says, you know, when you get into a conflict, what happens is emotional flooding. And he actually had little heart monitor things that you could put on yourself. And he had us in our couples. How many, anyone else at this retreat, Scott, was there anyone else? Anyway, he has us put these monitors on. He says, okay, what I want you to do is I want you to go back to the last conflict that you had, okay? And I want you to talk through the last unresolved conflict that you had. And so this thing, beep, 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 beep. And he said, now listen, what's going on here is, he says, there's a certain point where physiologically your brain cannot function anymore. You cannot give a good and rational response to this thing. And so what you've got to do is you've got to figure out how to bring that puppy down so that you can at least get the right part of your brain working. So, you know, there's this system to realize that the flooding can happen. And if I don't have a system, if I don't have a way to monitor and say, oh, Jones, you're getting talked up here, you take 10 breaths, or, you know, say, hey, machine, or hey, Scott, or whatever it is that I'm in conflict with, but let me just take a couple of minutes here because I'm starting to get worked up. You've got to have some kind of a system or flooding is going to take over. Without a system, resolution is painful and time-consuming. And so Jethro suggests a change in leadership structure. He changes the system. He said, Moses, you're a good guy and you're doing your best, but this isn't just working. This little conflict that I'm on with Amazon, when I've been talking to supervisors and managers, I say to them, listen, here's the deal. You can count it up there. Most of the time I only had 30-some emails. I said, but I've got these 50 emails. This is like conversation number 7. I've spent hours on this thing. Your people are all great. And they are. They are tremendous. You phone Amazon help and those folks are well-trained. They are patient. They listen. If they're saying something and you say, then they stop right away and let you talk. They take as long. They are great. I said, problem is there's something wrong with your system where you told me I wouldn't get triplicates, and if you're going to ship it to me, at least it should come to me. Why? Well, we don't know, sir. The only address we have is the right. Okay, there's something wrong with the system. And so Jethro understands that, listen, we've got to get a system working. Otherwise, it's painful and time-consuming. Now, with this system, Jethro says sometimes you need some outside help. Sometimes you just need somebody to come alongside and help. And what's really interesting, if you look at verse 21, look at the people that he says, it's fascinating. But select capable men from all the people, men who fear God, trustworthy men who hate dishonest gain, and appoint them as officials over thousands. What's fascinating is that these are spiritual qualifications. You notice that? One of them is kind of some would say it's a kind of a bit of a spiritual gift. They're capable people. They've got some gifting in being able to bring resolution. They're just kind of known as people that can figure things out and just, you know, kind of come in and say, hey, you know, I use this lots of times in some of the conflicts. I shouldn't say lots of times. There's not that many conflicts that I can't figure out myself. But there's times when I got to bring in an elder. I got to bring in someone else and say, you know, we can't get this figure. Can you come? Sometimes you need that. But it's a spiritual. What are they? They're people who fear God. Fearing God, the idea is an internal quality that's authenticated by outward behavior. That's what Moses is saying. Listen, it's this internal quality of fearing God, but everybody can see it in their outward behavior that they respect God. They're trustworthy people. That is, that they are people who seek the truth and are faithful and reliable. That's what that word means. People who seek the truth and they're faithful and reliable. They're not going to let anything interfere, such as their own prejudice or whatever, with the truth. And they hate dishonest gain. The idea there is, it's that there are people who've been tested. What it kind of means is people who hate bribes. In other words, these are people who have shown in their behavior that they are trustworthy. And he says, take these spiritual people and have them help you out. Because you see, it's a spiritual exercise. Because what Satan wants to do is destroy you, destroy your friendship, destroy your marriage, destroy this church, destroy this project, destroy your company, destroy your relationship with your boss. He wants to get in there and disrupt and destroy. It's a spiritual thing because he knows that if he can wreck this part of your life, it affects the whole show. It's a spiritual exercise, so you need spiritual, spirit-filled people to help you work it out. And then, in this system, you've got to figure out how to break it down into manageable bites. Now, in Moses' case, the overwhelming part is that there were just too many. There were too many people, and so it wasn't manageable. Sometimes in our conflicts, it's because we're trying to resolve too many issues at once. You know how it gets? This kind of ticks you off. You don't say anything. That kind of ticks you off. And then by the time you get into this confrontation with the person, everything's so twisted and tangled up. You've got 15 different things going on at once, and you're trying to resolve this whole thing. Now, you know, the odd time I get to help out people a little bit, and Scott tells me, you can ask him later, but I think I understand things right. He says, you know, Jones, one of the things you're half decent at is you can sort of help identify the strings that are tangled up. I mean, I don't always have any answer. I can tell you what the Bible says, but make it manageable. Okay, it sounds to me like we got 5 different things going on here. And identify the 5 things. All right. Let's first of all see, is there a root cause with these five things? Or let's find the one that's the most important and kind of go at this one thing at a time. Otherwise, you're over here for too long and it doesn't work. So you're going to have in this system some way of figuring out manageable bites. Next, you've got to keep perspective on how serious the conflict is. You see that whole thing? Like the little things they can solve themselves, it goes up to the Supreme Court of Moses. Man, you know, years ago now, when Andrew was a teenager, we had a dude come up from California, and we had him come twice. It was on parenting your teens. It was, in my opinion, it was brilliant stuff. Really, really helpful. I don't remember the guy's name, but I remember some of the stuff that he said. But one of the things that he said is, listen, parents, you got to choose your battles. If you don't choose your battles, when your kids are becoming adults, you are going to be fighting all the time. There's got to be some stuff that you've got to just let it slide and let them learn for themselves. And you just take the battles of the things that really count. Different levels of conflict require different methods of addressing. All right, so we've got to expect conflict and admit it. We've got to choose construction over destruction. We've got to have a system and structure in place ahead of time to make it efficient. We've got to know and remember the objective. Know and remember the objective that lies before us. The Amalekites, they didn't understand the objective. They didn't understand that the objective was God achieving his purposes of giving his nation a land and making all people one. That's God's objective. You know, he eventually makes one. The Amalekites, they didn't get that. They didn't understand the objective, and so they attacked and were defeated. On the other hand, the Jewish scholars tell us, Jethro, a Midianite, another nation, he understood. He got a grasp of the objective. Oh, God is at work here. And so I better just get on board, because this objective is going to be achieved. We've got to know and recognize and remember the objective. The objective was family reconciliation. And so Jethro comes and says, hey, Moses, this is your father-in-law speaking, and in our culture I have authority and I have respect, and I have your wife and I have your kids with me, and we're going to sort this out. You guys are going to get reunited. That's the objective. That's going to happen. We've got Moses saying, man, you've got to establish a system, Moses, where justice can be done, where these people that have disputes can get justice in a decent amount of time. That's the objective. You've got to have justice. You've got to rebuild and bring about reconciliation. Therefore, you need to get it dealt with more quickly before it escalates and before people get more fatigued and more frustrated. That's the objective. And ultimately, you want to gain peace. Now, remember, we're talking about shalom. So when the Jewish guy says peace, like it does at the end of verse 23, it's not like, okay, well, there's no more conflict. No, shalom means wholeness. Shalom means completeness. Shalom means that all is well. Everything is in its place and everybody feels safe. Moses, you won't be exhausted. The issues will be resolved. And these men that you're appointing to be judges in the lower court, they are going to grow into a gifting and a ministry that God has in mind for you. The whole shooting match is going to be shalom. What's interesting about Jethro is that almost every time, he doesn't show up very often, he's almost, I think every time he shows up, he's known as bringing peace. Bringing shalom. Oh God, may we be the blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall see God. This is Jethro's calling in his life. So with Amazon, I have to keep reminding me of the objective. When I start getting frustrated, you know, as I watch the hours tick by. All right, what's the objective? Number one, that Jesus doesn't get a bad name because of me in how I speak, treat, express, whatever. Number one, Jesus has got to, in the end, you know, because one of the shipping addresses, so my name is the church, that's you guys, and that's Jesus, so I got, that's number one. Number two, I want my stinking money back, man. So whatever's going to make that work, I want my money. And number three, sooner or later, we got to get this equipment so that we can achieve our goal of taking the good news of Jesus around the world through these cameras and through the internet. And we've got to praise and worship God and assist others in praise and worship God and maturing and assisting into the image of Christ. That's what we do. And so these are the objectives. So however I interact with Amazon, I got to remember and live out these objectives. So know your objective and remember it in the midst of the conflict. All right. Number five, well, the fourth thing to learn and change is be willing to confront, but first ask questions. Be willing to confront, but first ask questions. I love verse 14. Moses gets up to set up to judge. When his father-in-law saw that Moses was doing for the people, he said, "What's this you're doing for the people? Why do you sit alone as judge while these people stand around you from morning till evening?" Like there's something that didn't seem right to him, but he's maybe not sure. Maybe there's a reason that things are going this way. So he's going to confront the issue, but he's going to start by asking questions. So we observe a situation, we see what's going on, and we think, oh, something's not right here, you know. This isn't. We have suspicion that something's amiss. Hey, is Scott, man, is there something between us, like, you know, that doesn't feel, you doing okay, we doing okay, you know. Just, you know, I just kind of observe and suspect what's wrong. I ask questions for clarification. Is it right or is this? Or I kind of see things this way. Is that what went down? Is that what went down? Okay, well, you know, maybe then I can suggest a solution. You know, it might work better. Would it work better with this? Might help out. And then realize that we might be wrong. We might be wrong in the observation. We might be wrong in the suggestion. It's quite interesting that Jethro says to Moses in verse 23, and if God commands it, in other words, hey man, I might not have the mind of the Lord here. I might not be doing it right, but here's my suggestion, and let's check out and see if God thinks that this is a good way. Which brings us to kind of the last little point, and that is to maintain an attitude of humility in the midst of conflict. To maintain an attitude of humility in the presence of conflict. Jethro recognizes that he might not be right. If the Lord commands, as he says in verse 23. In other words, hey, this is just a suggestion. It's kind of how I see it, but let's go to God and see if this is right. Moses demonstrates that meekness, that humility that the Bible makes him famous for. He listens. He learns. And he changes. Great little measurements for how humble I am. Do I listen? Do I learn? And then do I change? Very tempting for me, might be for you as well, to listen and to learn, but then not to change. Because sometimes, like, it takes a lot of effort to change, man. And sometimes I find myself doing a cost-benefit analysis. You know, yeah, this kind of causes conflict, but, you know, 7 out of 10 times it works out okay, so I don't think I'm going to change. And the other three, well, you know, we'll just figure that out. Hey, Moses, it sounds in this chapter like Moses just goes and chooses a bunch of guys. It's actually not true. You read on, and the guys that he chooses, actually the community had a say in who these guys were. And that was a lot of hassle setting up this new system, man. But humility is saying, listen, if I'm going to listen to somebody and I'm going to learn this, then part of that humility is doing the work to bring about the change in structure or myself or communication or relationships or whatever it is, so that this conflict doesn't erupt again and so that people don't continue to be hurt. So, conflict, chapter 17, and its mirror, chapter 18. What do we do with conflict? We expect it and we admit it. We choose construction over destruction. We have a system and a structure in place. we know and remember our objectives. We're willing to confront, but we begin with sincere questions, and we maintain an attitude of humility. Now, let me give you a little bit of homework for this week. I'd like you to sit together with somebody that knows you well. Maybe it's somebody that you're in a conflict with right now, I don't know. And just talk through and pray through these steps. And just say, how evident is this constructive way of dealing with conflict? How evident is it in my life? And what are the areas maybe that the Holy Spirit's given me a little poke? That, yeah, you know, you need to tweak this a little bit, Jones. And talk with somebody who knows you well, pray together, and maybe listen, learn, and change. Let's pray. Father, you know, you've made us relational beings. You are a relational God. Relationships lie central to who we are. We are very aware of this in these COVID days because many of our relationships are forced to be distant and all the rest of it. And when we love people, hurt happens, big or little. When we're trying to get something done, conflicts can arise. They just do. Little ones, big ones, ones that last a minute, ones that last a week. And so I'm thankful that your word is just real. And when there's conflicts, it's there and it's evident. But in the midst of that, you show us how to deal with conflicts. So as you go through this week, I just ask that we would take the time to think some of this stuff through. That we can give you glory, even in the midst of conflict. And that love and grace and forgiveness and achieving the objectives can take place. We pray through Christ. Amen.